堂听 class.com。
The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat by Oliver Sacks. Dr. P was a musician of distinction, well known for many years as a singer, and then, at the local school of music, as a teacher. It was here, in relation to his students, that certain strange problems were first observed. Sometimes, a student would present himself, and Dr. P would not recognize him, or, specifically, would not recognize his face. The moment the student spoke, he would be recognized by his voice. Such incidents multiplied, causing embarrassment, perplexity, fear, and, sometimes, comedy. At first, these mistakes were laughed off as jokes by everyone, including Dr. P himself. The notion of there being something the matter did not emerge until some 3 years later, when diabetes developed. Well aware that diabetes could affect his eyes, Dr. P consulted an eye specialist, who took a careful history and examined his eyes closely. "There's nothing the matter with your eyes," the doctor concluded. "But there is trouble with the visual parts of your brain. You don't need my help. You must see a neurologist." And so, as a result of this referral, Dr. P came to me. It was obvious within a few seconds of meeting him that there was no trace of dementia in the ordinary sense. He was a man of great cultivation and charm, who talked well and fluently, with imagination and humor. I couldn't think why he had been referred to our clinic. After a few minutes' examination, I found his vision was good. He had no difficulty seeing a pin on the floor. He saw all right. But what did he see? I showed him the cover of a National Geographic magazine that had unbroken expanse of Sahara dunes. "What do you see here?" I asked. "I see a river," he said, "and a little guest house with its terrace on the water. People are dining out on the terrace. I see coloured parasols here and there." I must have looked very surprised, but he seemed to think he had done rather well. There was a hint of a smile on his face. He also appeared to have decided that the examination was over and started to look around for his hat. He reached out his hand and took hold of his wife's head, tried to lift it off, and put it on. He had apparently mistaken his wife for a hat. His wife looked as if she was used to such things. I could make no sense of what had occurred in terms of conventional neurology. In some ways, he seemed perfectly preserved, and in others, absolutely, incomprehensibly devastated. How could he, on the one hand, mistake his wife for a hat, and on the other, function, as apparently he still did, as a teacher at the music school? I had to think, to see him again, and to see him in his own familiar habitat, at home. A few days later, I called on Dr. P and his wife at home, with the score of the Dicta Liber in my briefcase. I knew he liked Schumann, and a variety of odd objects for the testing of perception. After exchanging greetings and chatting a little of current concerts and performances, I asked him if he would sing. "The Dicta Liber," he exclaimed. But I can no longer read music. You will play them, yes? I said I would try. On that wonderful old piano, even my playing sounded right. And Dr. P was an aged but infinitely mellow Fischer Dieskau, combining a perfect ear and voice with the most incisive musical intelligence. It was clear that the music school was not keeping him out of charity. Dr. P's temporal lobes were obviously intact. He had a wonderful musical cortex. What, I wondered, was going on in his parietal and occipital lobes, especially in those areas where visual processing occurred? I carry the Platonic solids in my neurological kit and decided to start with these. What is this? I asked, drawing out the first one. A cube, of course. Now this, I asked, pulling out another. He asked if he might examine it, which he did swiftly and systematically. A dodecahedron, of course. Abstract shapes clearly presented no problems. What about faces? On the walls of the apartment, there were photographs of his family, his colleagues, his pupils, himself. I gathered a pile of these together and presented them to him. By and large, he recognized nobody, neither his family, nor his colleagues, nor his pupils, nor himself. He recognized a portrait of Einstein because he picked up the characteristic hair and moustache. In the absence of obvious markers, he was utterly lost. But it was not merely the cognition at fault. There was something radically wrong with the whole way he proceeded. For he approached these faces, even of those near and dear, as if they were abstract puzzles or tests. He did not relate to them. He did not behold. I tried one final test. It was still a cold day in early spring, and I had thrown my coat and gloves on the sofa. What is this? I asked, holding up a glove. May I examine it? He asked, and taking it from me, he proceeded to examine it as he had examined the geometrical shapes. A continuous surface, he announced at last, folded in on itself. It appears to have, he hesitated, five outpouchings, if this is the word. Yes, I said cautiously. You have given me a description. Now, tell me what it is. A container of some sort? Yes, I said. And what would it contain? It would contain its contents, said Dr. P with a laugh. There are many possibilities. It could be a change purse, for example, for coins of five sizes. It could... I interrupted him. Does it now look familiar? Do you think it might contain... might fit a part of your body? No light of recognition dawned on his face. No child would have the power to see and speak of a continuous surface folded in on itself. But any child, any infant, would immediately know a glove as a glove, see it as familiar, as going with a hand. Dr. P didn't. He saw nothing as familiar. Visually, he was lost in a world of lifeless abstractions. Indeed, he did not have a real visual world, as he did not have a real, visual self. He could speak about things, but did not see them face to face. He construed the world as a computer construes it, by means of key features and schematic relationships. The scheme might be identified in an identikit way, without the reality being grasped at all. In the course of my examination, it became clear that his visualization of faces and scenes, of visual narrative and drama, was profoundly impaired, almost absent. But the visualization of schemata was preserved, perhaps enhanced. Thus, when I engaged him in a game of mental chess, he had no difficulty visualizing the chessboard or the moves, indeed, no difficulty in beating me soundly. When the examination was over, Mrs. P. called us to the table, where there were coffee and a delicious spread of little cakes. Hungrily, hummingly, Dr. P. started
on. And Venetian languages had the same words but different meanings depending on the way they were used. Their expressions were similar, but they had different connotations or emotional emphasis. Misinterpreting each other was very easy. So when communication problems emerged, they assumed it was just one of those expected misunderstandings, and that with a little assistance, they would surely understand each other. They experienced a
saw, but no longer saw, the table. No longer perceived it as a table laden with cakes. His wife poured him some coffee. The smell titillated his nose and brought him back to reality. The melody of eating resumed. How does he do anything? I wondered to myself. What happens when he's dressing? Goes to the lavatory, has a bath. I followed his wife into the kitchen and asked her how, for instance, he managed to dress himself. It's just like the eating, she explained. I put his usual clothes out in all the usual places, and he dresses without difficulty, singing to himself. He does everything singing to himself. But if he is interrupted and loses the thread, he comes to a complete stop, doesn't know his clothes or his own body. He sings all the time, eating songs, dressing songs, bathing songs, everything. He can't do anything unless he makes it a song. We returned to the great music room as Dr. P. was humming the last cake. Well, Sachs, he said to me, you find me an interesting case, I perceive. Can you tell me what you find wrong? Make recommendations. I can't tell you what I find wrong, I replied. But I'll say what I find right. You are a wonderful musician, and music is your life. What I would prescribe, in a case such as yours, is a life which consists entirely of music. Music has been the center. Now make it the whole of your life. This was 4 years ago. I never saw him again, but I often wondered about how he apprehended the world, given his strange loss of image and the perfect preservation of a great musical talent. I think that music, for him, had taken the place of image. He had no body image. He had body music. This is why he could move and act as fluently as he did, but came to a total confused stop if the inner music stopped, and equally with the outside, the world. In The World as Representation and Will, Schopenhauer speaks of music as pure will. How fascinated he would have been by Dr. P, a man who had wholly lost the world as representation, but wholly preserved it as music or will. And this, mercifully, held to the end. For despite the gradual advance of his disease, a massive tumor or degenerative process in the visual parts of his brain, Dr. P lived and taught music to the last days of his life.